You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Andrew O'Hagan's latest novel, Be Near Me, is narrated by a gentrified Catholic priest in a small post-industrial town on the west coast of Scotland. Although he was born in Scotland, Father David's years in England have made him very much an outsider. The story centers on a questionable relationship he engages in with two rebellious teenagers. And the book is published by Harcourt. I'm very pleased it has brought Andrew O'Hagan to my show today. Hello.
Hello there.
Now, you were raised on the west coast of Scotland. Is there anything about the middle class of Scotland that you have dealt with in this novel that makes it different from other similar places like America's Rust Belt towns?
I think it's very similar to many of those American towns, and I think American readers would recognize some of those divisions that exist often in small towns between the haves and the have-nots. Father David, my central character, he really is an outsider. He comes into this town not only with a very different experience of life, a very different kind of education, but he loves poetry and fine wine. He loves to cook and keep a splendid garden. And these people, although they have many qualities, they are absolutely inside their own tribe in this town. And he seems like a threat to them, as people like that often do.
He was educated at Oxford.
Yes.
And was a kind of a leftist student idealist when he was in university. But now he supports the war in Iraq. He's become rather conservative because of all of those other things you've just described, or because of the conservative nature of the Catholic Church?
It's interesting. You know, I think that there's a generation of readers now in America, as much as anywhere, who are coming into full bloom as readers of novels, who perhaps want to read a story that gives an account of what happened to that 1960s idealism that we're all caught up in. I was born in the year of the 1968, the year of the riots of the students in the Sorbonne in Paris. And it's always been in my head, try to write a story which people feel will really explain to them the journey that they have made from idealism, of course, the demonstrations at Berkeley and then here in New York, as well as in all across Europe and Oxford and in Paris too. And of course, what happened is that many of those student idealists, those demonstrators, became ministers. They became part of the establishment. They became, as it were, Tony Blair or Bill Clinton or a great push, George W. Bush, Sarkozy. They became part of an establishment, the kind of establishment, I'm afraid, that could press forward with plans for war. So that has been a real turnaround in our experience of ideals and politics. And I like novels that, although they're very local and they deal with drama and romance and really see life close up, they also deal with these bigger political questions.
And he thinks a lot about good and evil more than having some kind of relationship with God.
It's a long tradition in the Scottish novel, as it indeed it is in the American. If you think of Nathaniel Hawthorne or Melville, this concern with man's being stranded somehow between good and evil, men and women somehow having it as part of their life plan to choose between the two. In Scotland, we have a great tradition of these novels and indeed poems. If you think of Robert Burns and his great Tam o' Shanter, and that there's always the possibility that we can fall foul of the evil force.
The devil is always there.
The
somewhere
devil's always
is whispering
there.
In your ear.
Absolutely. You know, sup with a long spoon when you sup with the devil. But the devil is, if you think, he's present, in fact, in many of the writings in our respective countries. Some of the best writing, I think, focuses on man's attempt to run in the opposite direction from the temptation presented by badness and evil. If you think of a book like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, it's no mistake or accident that that book is written by a Scotsman. You know, there's always been this tremendous sense of, on the one hand, good, on the other hand, evil. And of course, we all live with that.
Although, you know, he's a Catholic, and that makes him a member of a minority in this town and throughout most of Scotland.
It makes him something of an exotic flower, indeed, in that country. Scotland is a Protestant country, and Catholics, such as I was growing up, were very much in the minority. And our experience was therefore highly coloured and dramatic in towns like that.
So since you're 20 years younger than Father David Anderton, Does that mean he would have been, someone like him would have been your priest or your teacher in school?
Well, interestingly, I was looking back through notes the other day because I was, I've been asked by an archivist to, who want to take my manuscripts. I was looking at this stuff again and looking at notes for this novel, and I see that it was almost a fantasy in my part at the beginning, the idea of having a priest who was so super educated and so strange and such an outsider that he would present a challenge to the customs and the manners of everyday folk, such as the folk I grew up with. Because, in fact, I say a fantasy because I sort of wanted someone like that to turn up in the town. The town was very uniform in its habits and its prejudices too. I mean, as you'll know, Scotland is full of division about the difference between Catholics and Protestants and the haves and the have-nots. And a priest like this would have been a kind of medicine, I think, had he arrived in our town. But unfortunately, I had to invent them in order to meet him.
He comes back not because he wants to necessarily, but because his mother is ill. His mother is a free spirit. She's a... Oops, I hit my own microphone. She's a writer. In fact, she's kind of like what he could have been, but turned out to be something else.
I've always noticed through the years of writing novels, and I think it partly explains why this novel has been such a success for me internationally. I've just come from Australia where the response was overwhelming, and it has been to this novel. I was trying to work out quite why, and I think it is to do with the fact that finally I was able to concentrate on the female characters. It's the female characters that really carry this book for me. The housekeeper, Mrs. Poole, who is so privately, modest, but ambitious in a very direct way to improve herself, a working class woman who loves being in company in the chapel house with this educated priest, because she knows nobody else in her life who read books and who cares about wine or cares about the finer things. She loves his experience. And Mrs. Poole becomes a sort of conscience in the book because although she feels much less educated than he is, in a sense, her moral acuity and her moral awareness is greater than his in the end.
Well, there's this big gap between his beliefs and what he winds up doing.
Absolutely. It's a deluded man at the centre of this book. And I think that it's the challenge for a novelist to try and engage readers. Readers are very smart nowadays. They just don't want the standard people marching onto the page. They want to see human complications, such as the complications that exist in their own lives. And this guy is both admirable, he's attractive in some ways, but he's also a fool. He's in hiding from himself, and the Catholic Church provides a sort of gilded cage for him.
And that's something we have seen in all of the scandals within the Church. Now, you could have made this into a novel about that, but this really becomes more complicated than being the story of a pedophile priest.
Well, the thing is, I think that we live in a world now that's so much controlled by a 24-hour media that we are blitzed all the time by images about right and wrong. And they're always through the main sections of the media anyhow. They come to us very black and white. People are either evil or good. People are either innocent or they're guilty. These are the polarities that we are bombarded with, when in fact all of us who live everyday lives know that life is always more complicated than that. People can be both good and less good at the same time. An act can be a terrible act, but touched with humanity too. And this guy, in my book, I wanted to finally present a portrait of a real man who creates difficulties for himself, actually involves himself in criminal activity, but he's not a paedophile. He's just someone who makes terrible misjudgments about the true nature of his own affections.
In the prologue, a mother advises, always trust a stranger. It's the people you know who let you down.
I remember introducing that thought to my own mother, and she said, oh, nonsense. It's family are the best people you'll ever know. And I gave her the long stare.
Your mother does not know that you write fiction, and that sometimes you give them good lines that aren't necessarily your own to your characters.
I think my mother finds it a fantastically unlikely notion that fiction actually exists. She's always telling me that, when I leave the kitchen to go upstairs or to go into the next room, she said, "Are you in there taking notes?" She doesn't trust me anymore. God bless her.
Andrew O'Hagan's novel, Be Near Me, is published by Harcourt Books. It's interesting to hear you talk about that, fiction and reality, and be critical of the media, considering the fact that you started as a journalist. And this is not a novel by a journalist. Something has happened here. First of all, you're too fine a stylist to have just made that transition, or else you were a very strange journalist.
Well, I think that my career was really lopsided in some ways. That I was the sort of person who came from a background where you had to work. You left university, you didn't go touring the world and examining your navel or having thoughts of a deep and distant sort. From my background, you went out and you earned a living. And a way to earn a living, although I was clearly a novelist in my bones, was to go and respond to newspapers who were asking me to write columns and feature writing at that time. So I did that, and I still happily do it from time to time. But a novelist was always what I was. It was just that I was, and still I'm happy to engage with the world of journalism. I find it interesting, and I like a deadline too. I think I wrote my first book when I was 24, and I thought then, and I still think now, that I was too young to be locked in a room all day on my own examining myself. I thought getting out of the house wasn't such a bad idea, and journalism allows that.
Also, getting involved with UNICEF?
Yes, that's become such an important part of my life. I've been lucky, and indeed I feel honoured to have been a UNICEF ambassador for literature, the first ambassador they've had for literature over the last 8 years, and that has taken me out of very familiar circumstances as a writer and put me into situations in Africa, whether in Darfur or in Malawi, where the epidemic with HIV/AIDS is so virulent and so world-troubling that been given the opportunity to step into a role which allows you to somehow engage with that problem, come back and help raise money and awareness about what's going on there. That has become such a crucial part of my life.
Is that a reason that you've included some of the contemporary political issues like environmentalism, globalization, and the war in Iraq in this novel?
I just think it's so natural to me to try and introduce these things into a novel because I think they exist in life, and I'm the kind of novelist who tries to get the drama and emotion of everyday life into my books. And there is always an element of what's happening politically in people's lives, even if they're not aware of it. The way how we deal with our trash, you know, is a political thing in our lives now. How we respond to world affairs as they come out of the television, that is political. These politics have always interested me, and I think it's almost second nature now. I think that we have entered into a period when the better novelists, if I could be so bold as to suggest it, are the ones who really furnish people's lives with a bit of richness. There's enough surface rubbish around. There's enough distraction around. There's enough about Paris Hilton being released from jail as if anybody cared around. What we need is for our writers perhaps to slow time down and give us the opportunity to express a little bit of patience and thoughtfulness.
It's one of the reasons perhaps this novel has been described as a kind of a contemporary 19th century novel.
I was amazed and very pleased when that was said by critics because I grew up reading those large Victorian novels, feeling that those authors were miracle workers because what they did was they tried to get all the jarring, conflicting elements of life between covers. And those of us who love books and among your listeners, those who love books, that's what they want. They want to be taken into a world where they can be truly, their capacities are increased. They come out of the reading experience somehow a larger person.
And I suspect this will be your breakthrough book in this country, already well known in Scotland. Andrew O'Hagan's Be Near Me, published by Harcourt Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.